Hello, friends. Welcome to the Neighborhood Church Podcast. You can go to neighborhoodchurchmn.org to get more information on how you can get even better connected. Have a good and beautiful day. Enjoy. Hello. All right, friends, we are going to get started. We are, sadly, this is the last part of our For the Bible Tells Me So message. And this has been one of my favorite series that I've done. I love talking about stories from the Old Testament. And today we're talking about a king who got nearly naked and lost his mind, which is a great topic to talk about at church, right? And of course, if we're going to talk about that, we have to talk about Halloween. I remember getting dressed up for my first time for Halloween. I was very little, and I dressed as Rambo. And I don't know why I chose Rambo. It's not like my parents let me watch Rambo when I was like five. But I had like the headband. And you remember yardsticks? You guys remember yardsticks? Like, I don't know if that's a thing anymore. But like, we always had a plethora of yardsticks. And of course, that was my gun. And my brother was probably something, you know, lame, because that's my brother, right? It's a shot at my brother on stage. You're welcome. And we went around, and it was the best thing. You get candy, right? You get to like pretend you're making a threat, like trick or treat, and you feel really like you're tough, right? I'm gonna trick. Okay, I'll just take the treat, right? So you get all that benefit. I thought that joke would kill. All right, sorry. All right, I'm just working out some material here. And fake laughing doesn't help, right? That just insults more. So I got to do all that, and it was great. And you get candy, you come home. And then the next year, found out that if you go trick-or-treating on Halloween, you're worshiping the devil. And so we couldn't do that anymore because we weren't going to worship the devil. But it was funny. You're not worshiping the devil on Halloween because we found a loophole, because apparently the devil's quite stupid, right? If you call it a harvest festival and you dress only as Bible characters, then it's not worshiping the devil. So we like slid into that one. But if you think about it, like, and I can't get on this tangent, but there's some really horrible things you could come to a harvest party at if you're only dressing as biblical characters, right? Like in Revelation, there's the two demons that run all of hell, right? That you could, me and my friend could dress up as those, right? So why am I talking about this? Oh, Halloween, right? So we stopped doing any kind of Halloween things from there on out. And when Nikki had a very similar experience growing up. And so when we had kids, we were like, hey, should we like do this whole Halloween thing? Like, should we get them all dressed up? And the answer was like, obviously, yes. But we had to stop and think about like, why did we stop, right? There was something we did, both of us, for a very little time, and it was super good. It was very positive. And then we were told that it was horrible and you were gonna, you know, worship the devil. So of course, when you're like seven, you're not like, actually, let me talk to you about the theological points on that, right? So it's like, we're now in our 20s and we had to reintroduce something that we left behind a long time ago, not by our own choosing, but we still left behind, and we got to reintroduce it, a new tradition, a new rhythm. And it was so good. And this is what we're talking about today, of there's times where you leave things behind, maybe because it's bad, maybe because it was not healthy at the point, or maybe it wasn't your decision. But when you could pause and look back and say, wow, maybe we're ready to introduce this value, this prayer, this tradition, this way of thinking, whatever it might be, that is a beautiful, beautiful thing. And this is exactly what King David does. And it is a beautiful story. So I'm going to be reading out of 2 Samuel, and I'm going to be reading the whole entire chapter because I was going to give you the summary, but the story is really, really good. So you can read this in 2 Samuel if you want. David again brought together all the able young men of Israel, 30,000. He and all his men went to Baalah in Judea to bring up from the Ark of God, which is called by the name of the Lord Almighty, who is enthroned between the cherubim on the Ark. They set the Ark of God on a new cart and brought it to the house of Abinadab, which was on the hill. Uzzah and Ahio, sons of Abinadab, were guiding the new cart with the Ark of the God on it. And Ahio was walking in front of it. David and all of Israel were celebrating with their might before the Lord. with castanets, harps, lyres, timbrels, sistrums, and cymbals. When they came to the threshing floor in Nacon, Uzzah reached out and took hold of the ark of God because the oxen stumbled. The Lord's anger burned against Uzzah because of his irreverent act. Therefore, God struck him down, and he died there beside the ark of God. Then David was angry because the Lord's wrath had broken out against Uzzah, and to this day the place is still called Perez Uzzah. David was afraid of the Lord that day, obviously. How can the ark of the Lord ever come to me? He was not willing to take the ark of the Lord to be with him in the city of David. Instead, he took the house of Obed-Edom Gittite, right? the ark of the Lord remained in the house of that place for 3 months, and the Lord blessed him and his entire household. Now King David was told, the Lord has blessed the household of Obed-Edom and everything he has because of the ark of God. So David went to bring up the ark of the God from that house to the city of David with rejoicing. When those who were carrying the ark of the Lord had taken 6 steps, he sacrificed a bull and a fattened calf. Wearing a linen ephod, David was dancing before the Lord with all his might, while he and all Israel were bringing up the ark of the Lord with shouts and the sounds of trumpets. As the ark of the Lord was entering the city of David, Michal, daughter of Saul, watched from a window, and when she saw King David leaping and dancing before the Lord, she despised him in her heart. They brought the ark of the Lord and set it in its place inside the tent that David had pitched for it, and David sacrificed burnt offerings and fellowship offerings before the Lord. Verse 18. After he had finished sacrificing the burnt offerings and fellowship offerings, he blessed the people in the name of the Lord Almighty. Then he gave a loaf of bread, a cake of dates, and a cake of raisins to each person, the whole crowd of Israelites, both men and women. And all the people went to their homes. When David returned home to bless his household, Michal, daughter of Saul, came out to meet him. How the king of Israel has distinguished himself today, going around half naked in full view of the slave girls of his servants, as any vulgar fellow would. And David said to Michal, it was before the Lord who chose me rather than your father or anyone from his house when he appointed me ruler over the Lord's people Israel. I will celebrate before the Lord. I'll become even more undignified than this, and I will be humiliated in my own eyes. But by these slave girls you spoke of, I will be held in honor. And Michal's daughter of Saul had no children to the day of her death. That is an intense story, right? There's a lot of moving parts on here. There's God killing someone for just touching it. There is this interaction between Michal and David, David getting naked. So let's start here. The ark, right? The ark is more than just a part of a movie, Raiders of the Lost Ark, right? Anytime I hear the ark, I instantly go to that tragic moment when I was a kid. I'm like, this is a really cool movie, right? And all of a sudden they take the top off and like the ghost bird comes around and then like the face melts. I was like a kid. I'm like, is that really going to happen? Right? So, right? So, The Ark of Covenant was made by Moses. God instructed him to make it. And this is where inside the covenant was the tablets of the Ten Commandments, like a bowl of manna and Aaron's rod or his staff. And this is like where God did what God did, right? Like God's presence was there. They'd bring it somewhere and they'd win in war. That's where God's favor was, how God would communicate to them. This was like, take the Constitution and how we treat that. Right, unless you're Nicolas Cage, then he can get around it. But like, we celebrate that, right? Times that like by a trillion. This was a symbol of where God rested, and it worked until it didn't, because they brought it to a war. This is funny, and the Philistines won, right? And they're like, well, we were not supposed to lose because we got the ark, right? This is not the agreement we had. So of course, the Philistines take it back home. And they're like, look what we got, and they put it in their temple, and their god bows down to it. It's like an idol. I'm like, that's weird. So they do it again the next night, and it breaks in half, and it's kneeling to it. They still don't figure it out. Then there's an infestation of mice. This is in the Bible, all right? Just want to let you know, I'm not making this up. Infestation of mice, they get tumors, they get boils all over their face, and they're like, oh, maybe this is not as good as we thought it was, right? So then they bring it back, and they put it just over the border, and that's where the ark lives for 20 years, right? It's like, we don't know if they forgot about it, but it comes up in chapter 6, the very beginning, says, David remembers the ark, right? So for 20 years, this national treasure, this is where God lived, this is where it happened, it just left somewhere else. And in this time period, there is this new kingdom being built, right? They go from this tribe, and they go to this king, and King Saul. And King Saul's like, meh, he's like good sometimes, ends up being one whacked out dude, right? And out of that comes David. And the authors of writing of 1 and 2 Samuel, they want to let you know David is the real deal. They go over the top to tell you how great he is. But like, side conversation, we also know that David was not a very good dude as well, right? For like, Remember, like the whole sexual assault, or you can even call it rape, right, happened. So we're going to drop that bomb. We're going to come back over here, right? They want to tell you how amazing and how great this king is. And what David is doing is he's trying to establish this new way of doing things, this new kingdom of how there was the old way of doing things and there's a new way of doing things. And in the city of David, in Jerusalem, right, they're trying to get this, like, be a real, how do you say this, like an accredited government. Other movers and shakers in the area are sending them gifts. They have political power. They're recognizing how many treasures they have, how wise they are, how beautiful this place is. David is making it like a legit governing body. And this is very different. It's working. But he has this problem. The commentator I was reading about was that David had an incredibly good PR team because you still had the old guard, the Saul people, right? And the Saul people are like, you probably know people like this. Like, we've always done it this way. This is the right way of doing things. And someone else comes along and they're like, actually, we're going to like alter everything, right? We're going to change and we're going to pivot and we're going to move this direction. And that's what David is doing. But there's still this whole community of people that are not signing on board. And this is when David says, let's get 30,000 people and let's go get the ark. Why? Here's why. Because when he brings the ark in, and they have the 30,000 there, people are going there not for a war, not for protection, but to throw a party, and they lose their minds, right? They are playing trumpets and cymbals and a bunch of other words I probably pronounced wrong, right? And they're having this huge, huge party because David knows if he brings it into the city, people are going to remember, I remember the ark. I remember when God, I remember my grandparents, my great-grandparents tell me that story of this. I remember my people and that war and how God brought blessing, how God brought power to those people at that time. And all of a sudden, the conversation isn't about, oh, the new things we're going to do, but we're going to leave you behind, or the old thing, the right way of doing things. It's about there is a true king in Israel, and that king is God. And they can see in this covenant, the conversation is how good God is, and everything that's happening around them is because of God, but they can see it from different vantage points. They can see it from different starting points, from the old guard to the new guard. Can you see what he's doing here? He's elevating the conversation. But something happens, and we have to talk about it, because if you're newer to spirituality, or if you've never read this part of the Bible, this is one of those stories in the Bible, as you're reading, you're like, God did what? He killed someone for touching the ark? And if you think about it, what happens is what any of us would do. Because if you have the national treasure there, right, and they have it on an oxen cart, and the cart, and it says it's on a hill, right, and it starts rocking, you're not going to be like, oh, just let that national treasure drop, right? You're going to do like, you're going to grab it. And when he touches it, he dies. This is weird. This is one of the stories that people who are very skeptical of God or skeptical of the Bible, they use this story often. Oh, really good and beautiful God. He touches it, and then God kills him. God is angry that he touches it. What's the context, right? And we could unpack this for like 3 or 4 messages. I'm going to give you a way too quick version. Here's what happened. When God told Moses to build the ark, God gave very specific instructions of how to actually move it. And it was supposed to be the Levites, and they had to use these special poles. And that's how you're supposed to do it. David has this beautiful idea of letting Israel know who the real king is, moving people into the same path of there's a new way of doing things, a new way of being human, right? We've been talking about that. But David just says, oh, let's just go make it happen. He was probably a 3 on the Enneagram, right? If like that's me. It's like, hey, we should go do this. And I think, what is the fastest way of doing it, right? And David's just like, all right, let's make it happen. And he disregards the order that God gave. See, there's an order that God established the world in. There's order that God has brought in. And it's often that we like to think that God's made in our image instead of us being made in the image of God. And it's easy for us just to say, oh, I just want to do it this way. I just want to use people for my own pleasure. And of course, God's going to bless that. And David does the same thing. He forgets the way it was ordered. And he cuts a lot of corners. And the authors are trying to, in the middle of this beautiful story, in the middle of this party, it's almost like they're trying to say, but we don't get to make things up. And if you are come from an evangelical background, this kind of message or this kind of talking point has been abused to the T, right? Because they say, well, you don't get to make things up, so you always have to listen to the pastor's voice because he has ultimate authority, and the way that he reads the Bible is clearly a lot better than the way that you read the Bible, right? You've heard that before, right? That's garbage, right? The order that we're talking about here is that God created us to love and be loved, period. The way the order that God put in here is that we're never going to oppress people. We're never going to own people. We're never going to use people. We're never going to abuse people. We're never going to oppress people. And anytime we do that for our own vantage point or to cut corners or to make things happen faster, God says, that's not how we do things. And there's consequences to that. That's called sin. And here, there's like this small little picture of that. In this whole story, they want to remind us, remember, you just can't do whatever you want. There is an order of doing things, and it should lead to what? Freedom, a party, a celebration. So it's interesting because when that horrible thing happens, he gets angry and then he just leaves it at that person's house that I can't pronounce, right? He just drops it. And then they're like, oh, I guess we can't take it. So they all leave. The party stops, right? And they're like, oh, that's a downer. And so they leave, right? And all of a sudden that family's like, this is amazing. Like all of a sudden blessing starts happening to them, which I don't know what that means. Like they get more donkeys or like, you know, more things start growing, all right? Like, whatever it is, it's like, it's significant. They're saying that great things are happening. David hears this 3 months later. He's like, oh, God is still blessing us. Can you see that? He thought, no. When we make mistakes, God runs away. You never heard that before, right? Never felt that before. God says, no, I'm still here. And I'm still doing beautiful things. And so David goes back and takes it back. Can you imagine being in that family? Like, wait a second. You just dropped this in my yard. This is mine now, right? And David says, he takes it, and this is my favorite part, the next two things. What happens then, David is bringing it into the city, and he strips down naked, nearly naked. It's almost like a like this nightie, right? It's like this really thin things that priests would wear, and it just covers not much of your body, and the party goes even bigger than before. And people are showing up because they want to see this covenant. They want to see what their parents or their grandparents or great-grandparents talked about. They want to see it firsthand. And two things happen. The first one is this, that he gives everyone a meal. And this is very important. And it says that men and women, right? Because remember at this time, women were like, of course we're woke now, right? It's like women are amazing, right? But back then it was like women were just convenient, right? They were just there. And there is a table and there's a party and there's an invitation for everybody. And then David gets nearly naked and dances. He intentionally takes off his kingly robes. I don't know if that's a word, kingly. Sorry, Dad. My dad's an English teacher. So like kingly robes he throws aside, right? And he starts dancing. He starts moving around. And why? Because there's this beautiful picture of that everyone's welcome to the table. Everybody gets a meal. And we're all eating the same thing. And it's the same thing that Mary talks about in her song. We're in Advent, it's coming up. She talks about how the rich become down and the oppressed come up. There is equal ground. And then he starts dancing, saying, you get in on the best of this God. You can experience this God. You can be a part of this kingdom, and you don't need to be a king to be on the best. You don't have to have a position of power. You don't have to be one of the beautiful people to experience this. Everybody gets to have the same meal at the same table, and all of us get to experience and worship and respond to this God. Can you see that? Now, of course, like David, as he goes on, they go back to oppressing people. They go back to enslaving people. But there's like this beautiful picture, just for a moment, that we get to see that this evolution of what it means to be human, that we don't own, we don't oppress, that we share tables, that we love one another, and we can all experience God. Then it moves to a pivotal point to Michal. Michal is Saul's daughter, and Saul was the king before David, right? And Saul had a way of doing things that really didn't work out. He had some things that were good. He had a lot of things that were not so good. And I'd encourage you to read that story. And David is saying, but we're going somewhere else. And Michal sees David and said that she's ashamed. Other versions of that, she's disgusted because she sees this king naked dancing around. Comes in and she goes, oh, it's sarcastic. Oh, look at the king. Oh, look how the king acted today. We're so happy for you, king. And you are disgusting. And even our servants' slave girls see you as a vulgar person. And then it shifts. And the authors of the story go from this party, then it goes through this very private conversation. Why? Because here's why. The way that Michal sees the world was the old way of doing things. It was Saul's daughter. She's saying, no. Kings act like this. People with power act like this. People who have access to God act like this. We yield power. We have an order, a class of people. And the people down here look at the people up here, and you have to be that way to hold that power. And David says, if that's disgusting, if that's not dignified, buckle up, right? Because I'll be even more undignified than this. And the words that they use, it's all about viewing these slave girls. Michael's looking down on them. And what he says, no, these women, these girls are going to see this as honor. It goes from whoever we were before, however we're doing things, there is a clear shift in power. There's a clear shift in direction. David says, we are no longer those people. We're no longer doing that. No longer is that how we order things. We're going this way. And from there on out, David's kingdom and his ministry, his life, whatever, is filled with messy, complicated things. But the authors want to let us know from this moment on, there is this flourishing that happens. And what a beautiful thing. And David reintroduces the ark of what once was, right? And he reintroduces it and saying, this is a beautiful thing, we're moving on. And then he also drops something saying, this is how we used to do things, and he leaves it behind and he moves on. And we can all learn from that. There's a couple takeaways. First one is this. I have to remember what order I put them in. The first one is what you put back down in your life, maybe you need to pick up again. This Thanksgiving, as with your family and your friends, and you have tradition, and maybe there's something that you used to do as a family or as an individual or with your friends or maybe as a practicing follower of Jesus, whatever it might be, something that you did a while ago that you left behind for whatever reason, like I talked about earlier. And maybe it's time to pick it back up. Maybe it's been months. Maybe it's been decades. Maybe it's yoga, right? I remember hearing someone, I'm not making this up, and I'm sorry if someone heard this and you believed it. I remember someone telling me like, oh no, yoga is an access for demons to enter your body because of the tradition that it came out of. And I'm like, what? No, you're crazy, right? Like maybe you heard that and you stopped. And maybe it would be life-giving to hold the pose or to chant, to remind yourself your body is strong, your body is beautiful, right? Maybe it's reading the Bible. Maybe you've put that down for a while because of the way it's been used as a weapon or the way that it's been used to manipulate and you just set it aside. Like, maybe I'm the world's worst pastor in the whole entire world, right? I think it's okay at times, because of what has been done to you, to leave it aside for a little bit. God is still God, and God can still speak to you, and God's word's not at threat. But maybe it's time to pick it back up. Maybe it's an exercise. Maybe it's wearing comfortable clothes. Maybe someone told you, well, you can't wear that, right? Like, what things? Maybe it's a prayer. Maybe it's a tradition. Like, when I was a kid, I was a part of the Catholic Church. And then we left it. And I remember being young and like almost like demonizing it, saying, well, that was a bad way. That was a wrong way. Funny, if something's different, you can call it bad or evil. And whatever I'm doing clearly is sacred, right? But there's some things that I remember doing that were so life-giving that I've reintroduced into my life, right? Of the whole, of the Franciscan priests and how they pray and how they move. It's so rich. So this Thanksgiving, just take some time to pause and reflect, and maybe there's something you need to pick up. Second thing is this, worship. Anytime that love is drawn out of you, that's heaven. I love saying this. Anytime love is drawn out of you, that in itself is heaven. You see a beautiful piece of art. You see your daughter walk in the room. You hear a great joke, right? Something, and it's beautiful, and love comes out. Right there is heaven. And how you respond to heaven, that's worship. I've heard people use this verse of David getting naked and dancing around as like a model of how we're supposed to worship. So, Dad, let's get that nightie on and start running around and get a sweat on, right? Right? And you can worship that way, right? You can. Even here, there's people who raise their hands. There's people who do this because at church, somehow we always have to have the hand over the hand like this, right? Like, or you sit down. There's a lot of different ways to worship. This model is not that we have to dance and run around, right? It's that we should. David experiences God and he responds, and that's worship. Anytime he responds to what you know to be true about God or experience of God is worship. And it's very important, right? Like we take time, Steve played some beautiful music because it gives you an opportunity. It's a practical way for us to respond to what we know about God, to say what we know to be true about God. So here's my encouragement. Begin to worship. This Thanksgiving, when you're sitting around that table and you hold your grandma's hand, right? You hold the person as you're praying, someone that you love hand, and it just feels good. There's something sacred about touching the people that we love. And in that moment, and you feel all the feels, or if you're like me, I'm a high feeler, so I feel them often, just pause and recognize and realize that God is in that moment, that the divine is in that connection, and then smile. That's worship. Or lean over and say, I love you. That's worship. It might be when we sing some songs today, it might even just be like singing, and you're like, I don't sing well. Well, you're in great company, because that's why we have the people who can sing really well, and we turn up really loud, right? But it might be just starting there. The point is, start, just begin to respond. And last thing is this, and this is why I did this. Some of you, I believe there's someone here that needs to hear this. Maybe there's things that you need to put down, right? Maybe, now I see why you're laughing, condo time, I forgot that, right? Condo is a woman, I believe on Netflix, and I can never get her name right. I always call her like, Nikki, what about the Cozy? She's like, no, it's not Cozy, condo. I'm like, condo, Cozy. So she taught people how to go through your homes and find things you don't need anymore, and she picks them up and says, you can hug that shirt. It's me, right? I hold all my shirts because I'm attached to meaningless things. And you could hug that Weezer sweatshirt and say, you were so good to me and you played a role in my life and it was now time to let you go, right? You can do this in your life as well. And Thanksgiving, how about this? It is okay to not hug every single person at Thanksgiving dinner. If you feel like that's toxic and you know your aunt's gonna say, no, you have to go hug, it's rude if you don't hug everyone. You are in charge of your body, right? And you can let that go. You can put that down. You don't have to laugh at Uncle Gary's racist jokes because you're afraid of offending him. You don't have to engage of, hey, what do you think about Donald Trump? You can just like let that go, right? You can set it down. There's things in your life that we, like Michael did, saying, no, this is the right way of being king. This is how we have to do things. We've always done this. We have tradition. Have you heard that before? Maybe there's things in your life with the divine, with God, that you're like, well, no, this is what we have to believe, or this is what we have to do, this is what we have to say. It's like, no, you don't. You can let some of those things down, and it's okay. If you're in a toxic friendship, right, it's okay to say, I have healthy boundaries, and I'm going to let it go. It's okay, and you are worth it. So around the dinner table, around the Thanksgiving table, dream of what you can reintroduce. Take some time to worship, and maybe, just maybe for a moment, you might want to let some things go. Let's stand and let's pray. Condo time. So what I wanted to do is I want to practice worshiping, and we're not going to sing. Some of you got really nervous. What are we going to do? We're going to practice worship. So here's what I want you to do. If you want, you don't have to. If you want, close your eyes. I want you to close your eyes, and I want you to draw up an image, an experience, a person that you deeply, deeply love. And I want you to hold that image, that person, that moment, that feeling. I want you to hold it present in your mind. Like for me, I'm thinking about when I walk in the door and my daughter yells, Dada, and still comes and gives me a big hug. That's heaven. And I'd like you to, however you want, respond. It could be saying thank you. It could be touching your heart. It could be giving a hug to the person next to you. Just even now, just practice responding to that love. Thank you, God. And we just collectively as a community just worshiped. So God, thank you. I thank you that you have invited all of us to this table where we can all see you. We can see the ark. We can see God. And we can share a meal together because everyone's included. And we can all respond in the same way David responded by dancing. We can all respond because you are accessible to all of us because you were good for all of us. And this Thanksgiving coming up, God, we say thank you for being so good. And I ask that you would prompt us of when we see love, when we see you, that we will smile, we will say thank you, maybe sing a song, or we tell someone we love them, or tell them that we're thankful for them. And we love you. Amen. All right. Thank you for that, friends. That was beautiful. Thank you for coming to Neighborhood Church, and we'll see you next Sunday.